My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions.
I look around me, I see the complexity of the universe. I think that because of this complexity, I deem that there's a creator. And I think that the biggest thing for me is a personal belief. And I think that the way that I feel while praying to God, going to church, that's something that is undeniable for me. And I think it's a lot of Christians as well. But I also know that a lot of people with other beliefs feel the same connection with their God. So I'm at a point right now where I know that there is verses in the Bible that I don't necessarily deem to be morally correct. But I do have this feeling with this personal connection with God. And I think that the complexity of the universe points me to believe in this God as well.
Okay. Well, let's start with, we can do one of two ways. We can start with the evidence that you think points to a God, or we could start on the other end and talk about the specific God, the God of the Bible. Which one would you like to do?
I guess we could start with the evidence for why I believe that there is a God. I don't think I can definitively prove it, but I think that there is some evidence to suggest that there is a God.
Okay, yeah, sure. Let's go over the evidence. What's your first piece?
Yeah, so I just think the complexity of the universe, the constants that we see, the universal constants in particular, that if any one of them changed by a slight factor, the world would cease to exist. So I think this is evidence to suggest that there is a God. I just don't think that the precision we could see could come about by accident. I think it coming from a Big Bang or eternal universe is just not likely. And I think it's just as likely for a God to have done this. And I'd rather put my faith in a God than mere chance.
So what would universes not made by God look like?
I think that just based off my own knowledge, if there was in the universe created by not a God, it would not have any form of structure. I don't think that there would be humans with this kind of intellect engaging on social media as we are right now. I don't think that there would be universal constants. Yeah.
Well, you're giving different answers for that. So you think that a universe that was not created by a God is a universe where just nothing ever takes form, it sounds like.
Yeah, I just don't think that there would be ever a single-celled organism to...
Could this universe be any different?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, so I don't really understand why we're picking God when presumably, you didn't say this, but I'm going to make the leap here. Presumably, there are infinitely conceivable different types of universes... That all fit with the God narrative. So this kind of sounds like, how do I know it was created? Because it sounds like the arguments for design, which say everything is designed. Then how are you determining what is and what is not designed if everything is?
No, I don't think that there could be various different types of universe that gods could create. I think that the types of universe...
But you said this universe could be different.
Yeah, but I think because of God's nature, the universe that we are living in is limited by his nature.
But, okay, so do you think... So do you or do you not think that a different kind of universe could exist?
I personally think that a different type of universe could exist. I do not think that God could have created a different universe.
Interesting. So he's not all-powerful?
No, yeah, I think he's all powerful, but I also think that he's limited by his nature. And just because he created a universe that we don't deem to be necessarily perfect doesn't mean that God could have changed it.
But to be limited means you're not all powerful. That's the definition of it.
I mean, we know that God cannot sin. So I think that is a part of his limited nature. So if you want to say that, then yeah, sure.
Sure. Okay. So he's just not all powerful. He's like most powerful.
A maximally powerful God. Sometimes it's...
Do you guys not think that he's limited by his nature? If he cannot sin, if he's a free agent?
If he's all-powerful, then he can do anything he wants to. That's just definitionally true.
Sorry, yeah, but Eric. I'm saying, like, from what you know, would you consider God limited by his nature?
No.
I'm sympathetic to the idea that God, like, has omni abilities but can't do something that's like logically impossible. Now, if you like, God can't make a square circle. Now, if you want to say that God can't sin and that's a logical thing, then that's kind of a different conversation. I let people get away with saying that most of the time. That's not really the conversation we're having here, so it's not really that big of a deal to me. But go on.
Yeah, so I also believe that God has free will, and since we're made in his image, we also have the ability for free will, and with this free will comes, since we were made in his image, I think that he's also limited by his free will, where he's not just doing actions that he doesn't have the power not to do, he is freely doing them as well.
Okay, is it okay if we go to the back to the universe before we talk about free will?
Yeah.
Okay, so apart from like the design arguments or whatever, you brought up that, well, we live in a universe with complex life or whatever. So how do you deal with the anthropic principle that if there is an observer looking at the universe can't not look like it was intentionally designed for observation?
You're saying that it doesn't look like it was designed?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm telling you, if observers are observing the universe, then they can't really come to any other conclusion other than this universe has the property of like being observable by us.
Yeah, I'm not sure, exactly sure what point you're trying to make.
Well, this is it's a puddle thinking that it's a miracle that the pothole it's in is shaped like the puddle is the most appropriate analogy. Any observer, any universe where observation is capable of being made, the observers are going to think that this universe was intentionally structured that way. But can't you see how that's not necessarily the case? A universe that exists where there is no God would also be a universe that observers can make observations in?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think that's the reason that people choose to believe in whether or not there is a creator.
So then, if a possible universe with observers that have the ability to do that can exist absent a God, then how are we delineating, or how are we like diagnosing or whatever, this universe as a product of theism or deism?
Yeah, so I think that the universe definitely can exist without the existence of a God. I think it would be a little harder to explain the billions of galaxies and the vast structure that we see in the universe.
Why?
I definitely think that it is plausible. But think that,
why does the existence of like many galaxies and whatnot, why would that increase the likelihood of a God?
I don't understand how it wouldn't, to be honest. I think
it cheapens our existence. And so if you believe in a personal God, and if you believe that the most important message ever revealed to conscious creatures in the universe just so happened to have been revealed in this tiny little pocket in the Middle East, despite everything that's out there, I think that that really, really flies in the face of the logic of a personal God.
I think that Christianity is spread all throughout the world, and I also think it's interesting that the universe is so big with these billions of galaxies, and yet we, as of now, are the only life form on Earth, and God even says that in the Bible, that we are his most valuable creation. So I think
You said we're the only life form on Earth.
I
mean, an intelligent life form? Yes,
I meant to say that as of now, Earth is the only form, people on Earth, and life form on Earth is the only kind of life that we know about extended from Earth. That sounds really bad, but.
Sure. So like, how is this evidence of God though? What I'm guessing is you're just saying that the universe is so vast and that's a reflection of this all-powerful creator's creative abilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that's the majority of people who are Christian kind of hold to this kind of ideology as well.
Right. But can't a universe that's not created by God contain billions of galaxies? Hundreds of billions of galaxies?
Yeah, and it definitely can. I'm just saying, I think that the probability of that is just as low as believing in a God.
Okay, how are we doing that, though? We only have one universe with access to, and I would say we don't even know that God exists, so I don't really understand these probabilistic arguments, but I want to hear what you got.
Well, I don't think I can put it into percentages of what the percentages are, but I think that when we look throughout the world, in our world, and we see complex life forms, for example, us as humans, I do not think that we could have started from a single-celled organism and advanced to where we are today without either a designer that gave evolution this process or the creation of Adam and Eve.
Why?
Yeah, there's a lot of problems with this.
Because the weird thing is the majority of evolutionary biologists and the biology field in general disagrees. So I guess I'm trying to figure out why is it that scientists tend to all agree that life did start without God, but for some reason non-scientists disagree? Do you think maybe the issue is that they studied the science and you didn't?
No, I think that science can let us down a lot throughout the world. We can see this. And I think that
do you think that you're in a position to know more than they know about biology?
No, I do not. But I think that a lot of people who have studied it and are Christians come to terms that maybe evolution is not as reliable as people are telling it, are saying. And if that is really the case, that we did not come from a single cell organism, that's what I'm going to be diving into research quite soon in. That really helps prove the existence of a God if the first life forms was truly Adam and Eve.
Oh, no, not at all. Because even if abiogenesis wasn't real, it wouldn't mean that God is real.
Okay,
I'm right? I just want to make sure we're very clear on this. So, what you're suggesting is that, hey, if I disprove this scientific theory, then it means that God did it. But that's not actually what that means. Even if we had scientific theory about how life arose, it still wouldn't mean that God was responsible for it. We would need an actual argument for the God, because what you're doing is you're trying to do a God of the gaps.
No, that's not what I meant to say. I'm saying that if evolution did not start from a single-celled organism, and the Bible says that the first human form of life was Adam and Eve, which was only thousands of years ago, this does not prove the existence of a God. However, it does greatly say that what he said in the Bible about Adam and Eve being the first human creation would help justify this claim. I'm not saying that it would necessarily prove it.
I mean,
do you know what an ERV is?
What?
An ERV, endogenous retrovirus?
No, I don't think so.
Actually, we got a great guy on stage that knows all about him, but an endogenous retrovirus happens when a virus gets into the body and it'll actually embed itself into the human DNA inside of the genome. And then when you reproduce, it passes it to your children and then to their children and then to their children basically forever. And this is one of the ways that we can map lineages. We can see hey, this lineage of people over here all have this exact ERV, all of them. And then we can also track even further back. We'd say, listen, it's interesting that all human beings have these exact ERVs. But the really interesting thing is that we share a high number of ERVs with the great apes, meaning we once had DNA with great apes. And a lot of these ERVs that we share between humans and great apes don't show up anywhere in the animal or plant kingdom. They only show up in humans and great apes. And that's because we shared common DNA with apes.
I mean, yeah, they have the same DNA as humans, so I don't understand necessarily why people deem them not to be humans when they have the same DNA as humans. I think that centuries ago, they may have had different skull structures because of the climate, because of the food they were eating, and the environmental circumstances that they were in. However, I do think that they were humans, just different forms.
We're not talking about Homo erectus, Neanderthals, or anything like that. We're talking about chimpanzees. Humans and chimpanzees share 205 out of 211 endogenous retrovirus insertions.
A retrovirus is a foreign piece of DNA that has spliced itself into our DNA. It's not that that's just how our DNA is. It's a foreign virus that found its way into our DNA. Do you understand the difference?
Yeah, I understand the difference.
Okay.
And the
go ahead.
The probability of sharing even 12 of those specific locations in common with another species is less than one in the odds of that are less than the number of atoms in the universe. But we don't share 12, we share 205 with them.
Wait, yeah. So right. if you think that the probability of that being that low, you think that the probability of us coming from a single cell organism is even lower than, right?
No.
Oh, no. The probability is 100%.
The odds of it being a coincidence, I did not say that the way I guess I needed to. The odds of this being a coincidence, sharing those insertion sites just on complete happenstance and not by through relatedness, which is how it gets passed down and preserved. That's why the odds are. That's the point of bringing up the astronomically low odds.
Okay, wait. Could you say that again so I can look into it? And I'm not saying what you're saying is untrue.
Sure. So, if humans and chimpanzees share a common ancestor, that means that the evidence for that could be found in our DNA, in our genomes, because ancestry, genetics is the study of ancestry. Basically, the only thing genetics can tell you is relatedness between organisms. Now, we looked at the genomes of humans and chimps, and our genomes are 98.6% similar. A lot of people know those numbers. But these retrovirus things are extremely specific. Like Justin said, a virus infects somebody and its DNA gets permanently incorporated into their genome. And then eventually that individual reproduces enough times that that genome sequence from that virus gets into literally in the entire population. Now, many of these retrovirus insertions are vastly ancient. But anyways, there are 211 known retrovirus insertions that humans have. Chimpanzees share 205 of them. And so the odds that if we just pick 12 of them, the odds that just by sheer coincidence that a virus, it would actually be 12 different viruses, could have infected or given chimps the same DNA, the same infection or whatever that became fixated, the odds of even sharing 12 of those are greater than the number of atoms in the universe, or is less than 1 over the number of atoms in the universe. But we don't share 12, we share 205 of them.
Right. And the reason why this statistic is so important is because when we look at the ERV, and if you can see the screen, the chain of base pairs in DNA, you know, it could be 3 billion base pairs in a chain of DNA, and we always find the retrovirus in the same location in that chain. That's one of the reasons why we know one retrovirus from another retrovirus, not just because it looks similar, but because it shows up in the same place in the same chain. And so the idea that all human beings and all apes would share 205 of these can only mean that at some point in history, we had a common ancestor that had all of these endogenous retroviruses. Because if you took a billion people today and you infected all of them with a virus, and let's just say that the virus was so strong that all 1 billion people actually ended up with an ERV, well, it would all end up in a different place in the DNA strand. They would all end up on a different part of the sequence. They wouldn't all end up in the same piece of the sequence. So even though you might be able to say, oh, I see this foreign DNA here, it'd be in a different location. But these are all in the same location in the same DNA strand, which is statistically impossible.
Yeah, but couldn't this just mean like a common design instead of a common descent?
There's no explanation for common design. Common design, it is always post hoc. And you can just listen back to the way you said it, but couldn't it also be blank? There's no mechanism, there's no methodology to intelligent design. In evolution, there is, and you know, you were talking about well, but that wouldn't support, but you need evidence for life coming from single cells. Well, I can give you that evidence, but what would the evidence that we are designed look like? There's no such thing as that. The only thing people try to come up with is they give arguments from incredulity. They say, well, here's something we don't yet know. Therefore, and they pretend as if that means it's scientifically impossible or naturalistically impossible. Therefore, it could only be the work of divine intervention, which is just simply not how logic works.
Yeah, and I definitely think that evolution could have caused this. Again, I just think that the possibility of it is low. That doesn't mean that it couldn't have come from evolution.
If the possibility is low, what are you comparing it to?
I'm just comparing it to for the complexities that we see, it's just like it just seems impossible to me.
Okay, why is it likely that a God can create something that complex?
Because they created the whole universe, I believe so.
What you're suggesting is something without evidence, right? We're talking about we actually have evidence, and here's where the evidence points to. You're just suggesting, well, here's the evidence, God did it. But how do you get from the evidence to God is what we're trying to figure out.
Well, I guess it's kind of like the same thing that you guys are doing when I talk about the complexities in the universe. You're just saying that doesn't need to be formed by a God. And you're basically doing the God of the gaps, but just saying that there is no God. That's just how formed by a God. I mean, every time I say something, you're like, well, that doesn't mean that there's a God. Like, no matter, you could give any evidence for it, and you could be like, well, that could just come from science. Like, literally.
Well, no, we're saying that the evidence that we have points towards naturalistic phenomenon. Like, all of the science points towards naturalistic phenomenon. And I think the DNA evidence is good evidence that evolution is true, especially because the model has allowed us to predict, hey, if we look in such and such region, in such and such geographical or geological strata, we should find an animal that looks roughly like this, even though they've gone extinct. And then we look and we find the animal because our model of the world is able to make predictions, and we can actually prove those predictions to be true because our model actually works. But there's no predictive power with the God model. You can't do anything. God says things, they don't come true. God gives prophecies, they don't come true. God said, you think God created the world with fine-tuning, but children are born with bone cancer, and there's tornadoes and tsunamis that kill people at random. At average, 100,000 people a year are randomly killed. In our model, that's perfectly explained. In your model, it doesn't have an explanation unless your God is evil.
Yeah, I understand that. I think that evolution and science in general can explain a lot of things. I think that the evidence that they do have to support their ideology is sometimes very good, but there are also things that evolution cannot prove. Like the human, how the complexity of the human eye, the blood clot.
Eric,
you do this one. I gotta use the restroom.
And then like a butterfly with the eyes.
Compound eyes, yeah.
How did that come about by evolution?
If you need a designer to design eyeballs, if sight is such a difficult process to evolve naturally, and it needs a supernatural creation, then why on earth are there 40 different types of eyeballs in nature? That makes no sense. Yeah. That makes
and
much.
The thing is too.
Go ahead.
Our rods are placed on the other side of the retina. The light has to pass through six different layers of the histological structure of the eyeball to get to the rods. Why would a God design that in that way?
Given that there are compound eyes that do work the other way. The vertebrate eye is wired backwards and has a blind spot. The photoreceptors are on the opposite side of where the light enters in the retina. Whereas cephalopods, they have a compound eyeball, and the photoreceptors are on the side of the retina where the light enters in. This is not good design.
Light has to pass through two plexiform light layers and two nuclear layers and the ganglion cell and the bipolar cells just to get to the rods. It has to go through 5 or 6 different layers just to get to the photoreceptive cells.
Yeah.
And why is that a problem?
Because it is reducing the visual acuity of the rods, so the rods in the human eye are incapable of picking up details, and they get completely turned off when there is a high light intensity, because of the fact that they are more photosensitive to light, because of them being wired in a way that makes them get less light when there's light outside. So, for example, in high intensity lights, the light gets blocked by the 5 or 6 different layers in front of it, which reduces the acuity of the eye, making things less visible and less detailed when you look at them.
You can also, something you can do is, I don't know how well you're going to be able to see me, but if you close one eye and hold your thumb at eye level in front of you, now don't follow your thumb, look straight ahead of you, but move your thumb to the side. You only have to get it not even a foot off to, in my case, this would be to my right. And then your thumb disappears from your sight completely because you don't have photoreceptors in that part of your retina. So an intelligent designer designs an eye to see that is not capable of seeing in parts of this. And our brain has to just kind of hallucinate things in a weird way to fill in gaps for you. It doesn't look like this kind of waste, fraud, and abuse is not the kind of thing that you would expect in design. I wouldn't think, because we don't create, humans have never intentionally created any kind of light capturing device that by design has, you know, a blind spot like this. The only exception I can think is a reflecting telescope, but that's because it's like literally there's no other way to do it. You have to put a device in front of the mirror, but it doesn't actually obscure the image in any way.
You're basically just saying that any kind of flaw that you can see in design is saying that the creator could have created it better.
Perfect things don't produce flaws.
Yeah, but we're not perfect, so I don't know.
That counts as evidence against us being the product of perfect creation.
But because of sin, we're not perfect. He made us perfect. So maybe...
So Adam and Eve didn't have blind spots? They had cephalopod eyes?
I mean, they could have. I don't know.
Exactly. You don't have a methodology. We don't have anything to compare to. We don't have any justificatory pathway for assigning probabilities.
I think that the problem with science in general is you guys are always looking for proof. Well, and most
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Was Adam born with or without a penis?
I mean, he reproduced, so I'm not sure.
Right, but was he created without one? Because originally, only Adam was created, and then God gave him the animals. And it wasn't until God said that he wasn't able to find a mate among the animals that he made Eve. So between being created and between Eve being created, did he have a thing?
I'm not exactly sure. I would assume so, though.
So that means then that God did intend when he created Adam to use his thing, right?
I'm not necessarily sure, because at that point he wasn't reproducing, so I'm not sure. He could have.
Right, but does God know the future?
Yeah, but he doesn't. That doesn't mean that if I know something, that doesn't mean that you made it happen.
No, I'm not asking about free will or if you think he's performing the act. I'm just saying, does God know the future?
Yeah.
Okay. So if God does know the future, then we would assume that he created Adam with a thing already, knowing that he's going to need it later?
I don't think so, because you could say that about anything. I mean, I'm assuming that is the case, but I'm saying that...
So
like,
So I want to make sure you're saying that the penis wasn't made intentionally, like the male and female reproduction happened by accident.
No, I'm saying, yeah, I think it was. I'm just saying that the argument you're making is not very good, but yeah, I think that
you don't know what my argument is yet. I'm just trying to track your position. Okay, so you're saying that you don't know if God created Adam originally with a penis, and...
Yeah, I'm saying I don't know, but I think it's a high probability that he did, yeah.
It would, or else the narrative would probably say that when Adam was put to sleep, he didn't just take a rib out of his side. He also gave him a penis. You would expect that to be part of the story.
It, but I just assume that he was created with a penis.
Okay, so God created Adam with a penis rather than giving him one later, most likely because he knew, because he knew the future, and he knew he would need it, right?
Sure.
Okay. Now, if we're assuming that God creates things in it, he creates things that have a function because he knows he's going to need them in advance, right? Because he knows the future, okay? Then is it consistent that God would put a talking serpent in the garden that he knew was wily, he knew was a trickster, and he knew was going to trick Eve? Is that a logical thing to think that he would put that in the garden knowing what it would do?
Yeah, I think he knew what it was going to do. That doesn't mean, again, that he said it, forced it to happen.
But did God create the snake?
Yeah.
Did he have to create the snake?
I would say so, yeah.
He had to? So he's not all powerful then?
If he created the perfect world, then that means that the perfect world was with Satan in it. So yes, I think that he had to create the snake.
Did he? But well, in your worldview, the Satan and the snake are the same thing, which is fine. But yeah. I'm asking, why did he have to create the snake?
Because I believe that God created a perfect world, and the world he created is perfect, and thus the snake is perfect as well.
Okay, so he created the snake, but he didn't know the snake was going to be bad?
Okay, yes. It would be like me time traveling to the future and knowing the things that were going to happen, but I didn't cause those things to happen. I just knew that.
I'm not saying he caused anything to happen. I'm asking you, did he know the snake was going to be evil?
Yes, he knew, yeah.
Okay, so he knew the snake was going to be evil from day one, didn't he? Because Jesus says that Satan was a liar and a murderer from the beginning. And then in 1 John, he says the same thing. He says that Satan has been lying from the very start. So God knew from day one that the snake was going to be evil, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. Did he have to create the snake?
I think we just went over this.
We didn't. You almost went over it. Was he required to make the snake?
I mean, he's God, so he was required by himself to create the snake. Otherwise, he wouldn't have created the snake.
That doesn't answer the question. What was causing him to have to make the snake?
His own belief.
Desires?
His own desires, yeah.
So God desires.
Desires. Evil. There you go. We finally got there. So the evil we see in the world, in your worldview, comes from God's desires, which is much less parsimonious with just living in a chaotic universe.
I don't think that's the case, but...
So what's more parsimonious, that we're living in a chaotic universe that is a product of chance, or that there's a God that created all this nonsense who intended for there to be chaos?
Wasn't the angel originally, wasn't the devil originally good and he chose to rebel?
Nope. That's not in the book anywhere.
Are you sure?
I'm positive of it. Jesus himself in John said that Satan was a liar and a murderer from the beginning. Is that John 6:44 or 8:44? Let me check. No,
yeah,
it's 8:44.
I think we all are. He would say that about anyone.
What? No, he wouldn't say it about anyone. He said it about Satan. That's who he said it about.
You don't think he would say that about anyone, that our hearts are prone to sin?
No.
Even when we are in the world.
You are from your father, the devil, and you chose to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there's no truth in him. So he was a murderer from the beginning. He was never a good guy.
Isn't there a verse in the Bible that says that God develops a relationship with us while we're in the mother's womb?
No, there's a psalm that David writes where he says that you knew me before I was born, knit me in my mother's womb. Before I was born, you already knew every day that was written for me, so on and so forth.
So wouldn't he already know whether or not Satan, like, that's why he knew, but he still gave...
You nailed it. Explain it for you. This is not hard. This is not hard. Okay. So if I create a robot, like, so I actually create robots for a living. I'm an electrical engineer, but I do automation. Okay. So if I create a robot and I give it AI technology, so it can do any decision that it wants, right? I gave it the ability to make its own decisions. If I create a robot and I put it in a house and I give it the ability to, like, shoot flames out of its eyeballs, and I give it scissors for hands so it can go around cutting people if it wants to. And then, like, every once in a while, it'll just have a mental lapse and hurt somebody. You know, it's going to have a mental failure. Am I responsible for everybody in that house that gets hurt by my robot?
Yes, I think so.
Right, yeah, because I created the thing knowing it was going to do harm. I didn't have to create the thing. I could have not created it, so I'm responsible for the thing. So God created the thing.
That's why he sent his son.
So God created the thing. Wait, he didn't have to do any of that. He could have just not made the devil.
But isn't Jesus bearing our responsibility? So in a way,
not for Satan. We're talking about Satan right now.
He's bearing the responsibility for all of mankind, including...
We're talking about Satan, not mankind.
It's life. If somebody steals $100 from you, and then later on, they give you back the $100 they stole, is that person guilty?
Yeah, I think so, but I think...
There you go. God is still guilty. It doesn't matter that he sent himself to sacrifice himself to himself for what he did, still guilty, still morally responsible.
Yeah, bringing Jesus into this is going to make it worse. I know you want to bring Jesus into it because it makes it feel like it's going to be better, but I promise it's going to make it worse if you bring Jesus in.
Okay, but, like, I know I've already went over, but here's my thing. Like, I don't understand why people have an issue with me believing in a God, believing that there's something beyond myself. Like, I think that the possibility of there being a God, I would have put in a percentage, even though there's not. I'd say that we know that Jesus walked the earth, so I say that the possibility of him claiming to be God, which many people would agree that he did claim to be God, I know that's a controversial thing, but I would say, like, 5%. So if there's a 5% chance that Jesus claimed to be God, he walked the earth, and he rose again, I think that's good enough chance to believe in it, so I'm going to go ahead and believe in it. I don't know why that's an issue, why people have such
a big problem. But Muhammad walked the earth. Does that mean that he's a prophet?
And people can believe in him as well. Like,
right, but Muhammad walked the earth. Does that mean he was a prophet?
I don't think so, no.
Like, we don't...
Okay,
we don't
so
care
just
if
because
is,
someone existed.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we don't care if this is what you believe in. We're just not buying it. Like, you can sell Girl Scout cookies, but I ain't buying. I've seen the prices lately. Actually,
yeah,
that's
I mean, I love
I
a good
three
thin
boxes.
Mint.
But yeah, no, we don't have a problem with you doing, like, believing this or whatever, so long as it doesn't, like, violate anybody else's rights. Just like you don't have a problem with the Muslim believing it, just like Justin pointed out. But when you're trying to, like, you're trying to sell us that yours is better, and we vehemently disagree.
Yeah, I just think that you guys go about it with a critical eye, and I think if you didn't go about it
that's
with such
how you
a critical
should
eye, okay, but this is what I can say about evolution to begin with.
Go ahead.
There's this analogy in this emperor. He's just naked, and everyone's like, he's
yeah,
telling everyone.
Has no clothes, yeah.
He's telling everyone.
Scientific experiment. The spirit of science is that it is done with the possibility of proving your own idea wrong. Religion has never, ever attempted to do anything like this.
But I'm just saying, I can almost... not guarantee you. If you guys did a deep study into simply evolution, and did it with a critical eye. A very
Eric has a degree.
Yeah, we do. This is done. This is how science is done.
But no,
Eric is a science educator. He's got a bachelor's degree in science, don't you?
Throughout all of education, you're presented with evolution as a fact, and you just accept the basic.
You are presented with confirmed hypotheses and observations. The things that ended up being wrong have been discarded. When was the last time that Christianity said, hey, you know what? This particular doctrine of Christianity is false, and we ran a test, and this is now what we believe in. When has Christianity ever done that?
Fermentation over the earth. We don't think that that's true.
Have you met a flat earther?
The Bible does say there's a firmament, by the way, which is a huge problem because there's no firmament.
And I've talked to non-flat earth Christians that think that there was a firmament. There just isn't any more. So no, this idea has not been abandoned.
It has not been abandoned.
Do you realize that some scientists say that they, like, some scientists literally do not believe in evolution? That doesn't mean that the whole argument's abandoned. Just because some people believe that there's a fermentation doesn't mean that the majority of people don't.
Firmament.
Like, I mean, firmament.
Yeah, firmament.
Firmament.
Yeah, fermentation. He's something
got his
that
science
you.
Science hat on.
Firmament.
Yeah. I mean, I love some good fermentation.
It's Leif. Did you study evolution?
Did
you study evolution?
Okay.
They do study evolution?
No, he's asking
if you
do.
Did you study evolution? Did you? Because you said that if you... Yeah. You said that we have to study it to understand it. So yes. How do you know that if we studied it, we would find out that it's bullshit?
Yeah, so throughout education, I did not study evolution because my teachers taught it to me through a creationist point of view. But when I got to college... when I got to college, the majority of people who I knew were Christians, well, not the majority, some people believe in Christianism, but a lot of them believed in evolution. So I just recently started looking into it and talking to professors as well about evolution.
Constitute you study it?
I'm saying I'm just now beginning to study it. But every time I have to have the facts presented to me for why evolution is good, they say, like, well, we observe beaks changing. Like, they always say, like, the same stupid stuff.
Oh, and the evidence for it. You haven't really studied it then.
So how do you know it's stupid? It's Leif. How do you know it's stupid?
Because every
form of
if we explain to you the mechanisms
of evolution, just a second, it's Leif. If we explain to you the mechanisms of evolution, you wouldn't even grasp it in the first place to make the judgment that it's stupid or not. You wouldn't grasp it. You simply do not have the facilities to, because you haven't gone through the academic process of learning biology. It's just something you wouldn't grasp. How are you making the judgment? How are you making the judgments that it's a stupid argument, or that studying it is going to lead you away from evolution when you haven't done the process yourself?
Yeah, I think from the basic knowledge that I have about evolution through microevolution and people just saying it's on a broader scale, and they're translating it to 4.8
There is no such thing as that.
When they're translating it to 4.8 billion years for the entirety of how old the Earth is, I think that's absolutely stupid. Like, there's no way...
How is that stupid?
There is no way...
Can you describe evolution in your own words?
Yeah,
can you describe evolution in your own words?
Yeah, evolution is the process of organisms developing into more complex organisms.
No.
Okay.
Well, I know that's not like the
exactly like you're unable. It is not even close. You're unable to define the term itself in the first place, and then you're coming up expecting to be able to debate it and tell us whether it's a good argument or a bad argument. For example, when the host brought up ERVs, you didn't even know what they were, and yet you have quote unquote looked into evolution.
No, that's not what I said. I said I'm
you called it dumb. You said that it's dumb. You said that studying it is going to lead you away from it when you do not even know the basics. Any of the evidence. You said it. That is literally what you said. You said studying it is going to lead you away from it because it's stupid.
No, I said if you looked at it through a critical eye, you might.
Scientists do science.
So 95% or more of biologists claim to be non-theists. This is a very high percentage. But are you aware that, you know, most people that go into sciences did believe in a God at one point? And so I've got a lot of friends that I grew up with. I was from a small town. Some of us went into the sciences, some of us not. And all of them came out on the other end. I have one friend that actually went to school for marine biology, and he's not a believer either. No, so, but he
thing about people who went into science,
what I'm saying is, as a percentage, you are way, way more likely to go into biology or the sciences as being a believer and coming out being a non-believer, because that's the trend that we have. So I guess my question is, like, when we have all these biologists getting trained, and all of them, that they go through their training and they're like, yeah, I don't see a God here. All the evidence points to the contrary. Me as a non-professional, I went to school for biblical studies and electrical engineering. Me as a non-professional who didn't study biology, why would I say, listen, these 95% of biologists just got it wrong, but this one guy on the internet actually got it right, and he didn't take any biology classes, but I'm sure he nailed it.
Yeah, I think that there's a verse in the Bible that said they worship and serve the creature rather than the creator.
This is what flat earthers say. It's verbatim what they say. They're the same arguments. I really want to know why you have a problem with 4.5 billion years of time being a thing. Where were we going with that?
Yeah, I just think that there's no way to estimate that kind of timeline when the most known civilizations are only thousands of years old.
We don't tell time by known archaeological sites. We can see billions of light years, for example.
Yeah, also there are two settlements currently being excavated in Turkey that both date all the way back to the 10th and the 12th century BCE. So 10 and at least 10 and 12,000 years old, plus the two that we're in right now. So 14,000 years ago.
Yeah, we're getting double the age of the biblical age of the earth. Tree ring data goes back. We have uninterrupted lines of tree ring data that go back tens of thousands of years. I can get you an exact number pretty soon.
I mean, when God created the earth, he created it with age, so I wouldn't have a problem with that.
That is a claim that I would like to hear substantiated rather than just proclaimed.
Actually, yes, when he made the earth, trees weren't on it yet.
The trees
came after the earth was made.
The tree of life.
But do you think the tree of life is still here?
I think that the tree of life was fully grown; otherwise, it wouldn't have any fruits on it.
Do you think it's still here? Do you know where it's at? Okay, we're talking about trees that we know are on the earth, and we know there are tree ring data that goes back thousands of years before Adam and Eve.
Yeah, but I don't think that's... I mean, just doing it off tree rings is not very reliable as well.
Why?
You can do ice core, carbon dating.
Weather patterns.
We've been studying tree rings for so long. We know what kinds of things... weather patterns and climate is only going to influence the gap between the rings. What young earth creationists try to do is say, well, but the trees can grow multiple rings in 1 year. It's typically only two. That is only known about in an extremely tiny number of fringe cases. But if you're going to say that, well, the tree ring data goes back tens of thousands of years, but the trees were created mature. So how many rings were the trees created with? There is no answer to that question because you're not explaining to us how you know this. You're just telling us the excuse for how you can preserve your belief in the face of what the evidence is.
I'm saying that when creation began, God created Adam as a man. He didn't create him as a little child. When the tree of life had to have been fully grown for Adam and Eve to eat of the tree of life. I don't think animals started off as infants. They were fully grown. So I'm saying that if he did these things fully grown, and I think he did the same thing with the universe. I don't think that the universe, I think he created it with density and complexity.
What evidence of that do you have?
I just told you, when he created Adam, Adam was not a little baby when Adam was born. He was a man.
And what evidence of that do you have?
The Bible. That's why.
That's not. But the Bible's not good evidence. But the Bible says that the earth is flat and there's a firmament over it.
Of course, I'm referring to the Bible when I'm saying that. Like,
right. But the Bible's not reliable about giving us scientific information. Do you think that the earth is flat?
No, I do not.
Okay. Then you don't actually believe the Bible is reliable.
Are you talking about the verse that says that?
Many verses.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah. Can you tell me them?
The circle of the earth. I think the most. Satan shows Jesus all the kingdoms on the earth all at once. Unambiguously says that the earth does not move, which isn't necessarily flat earth, but it's very clearly a geocentric book as well, which we know is false.
You don't think that God could have showed Satan a vision of the four kingdoms on earth?
It doesn't say that he showed him a vision. It says he took him to the highest mountain.
Okay, but like, if God is God, how is that like an absurdity to say?
Because you can't go to the highest mountain and see all the kingdoms of the earth unless the earth is flat, which is what it says in Job 38:14. It says that God can even grab hold of the skirt of the earth and shake it out because it's flat. It's got a skirt. It's a disc. That's why it says it's formed like clay beneath a seal. Do you know what ancient clay seals looked like?
I'm assuming flat.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to show you what the Hezekiah clay seal looks like.
When you guys get into like disproving the existence of a God, when you try to say like the contradictions in the Bible, you always have like I'm sorry to say, but the contradictions you make are just like the slightest things. That if
the shape of the earth is a slight thing?
Shaking it out does not literally mean that the earth is flat. Like it's
How do you grab hold of the edges of a globe and shake it out?
Okay, let's just assume that the earth was flat. How the hell would you ever shake out the entire earth? Of course it's a hyperbole. Like
I know, and the hyperbole entails that it's flat and it has edges.
Oh my gosh, if you really think that's what God was trying to get at with that, then I'm sorry for you. Like that's just so dumb.
The metaphor doesn't work with a globe. That's what I'm saying. No one's saying that God is literally shaking out the earth. We're saying that the metaphor doesn't work. You can't grab hold of the edge of a globe. Okay, even you can't grab hold of the edge of this. It says that the earth is formed like clay beneath a seal, which is exactly what we have here. This is what a clay seal looked like, which is why they always pictured the earth as being a round disc with a dome over top of it.
Okay, I'm saying even if I were to make an analogy now about shaking out the earth, that someone would still probably use that analogy. That doesn't literally mean that they think that the earth is flat. That's just a good analogy to use to say, like, to prove a point.
The point is you can't grab the edges of a sphere. That's the point. If somebody said, well, we turned a new page, and it's like, wait, but life isn't made of pages in a book. It's like, yeah, we know, but, like, you know, one event comes after the other, and in a book, you know, you turn the next page. And then someone comes around and says, well, actually, he was talking about his car when he said turn the page. Like, wait, cars don't have pages. Well, you're just not understanding the analogy. No, you can't turn the pages in a car. Cars don't have pages. It doesn't work that way. Globes don't have edges. It doesn't work that way. Yes, it's a metaphor, but the metaphor has to make some sort of sense. Doesn't necessarily have to be literal sense, but it has to make some sort of sense. Spheres don't have edges, so that metaphor can't make sense in that context.
So you don't read poetry, do you?
I don't think you actually understood what he said. No one's saying that God is literally shaking anything. What he's saying is the metaphor is of God grabbing hold of a flat object and shaking it, which you can't do with a globe.
Okay, but if he would have said, I'm going to take a ball and shake it, that just not sound good.
They didn't know what balls were?
Yeah, but like imagine
he couldn't say, he couldn't say the ball of the earth
and shake it.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have, but I think that the other way I think that the other way sounds much more poetic.
It's not more poetic, it's just inaccurate.
Like, okay. This is what I want you to do. I want you to tell me the two best contradictions in the Bible.
Well, we weren't talking about contradictions yet. I love the biblical contradictions. My favorite are the contradictions.
The best one.
Well, there's no best one. I've got like 100 of them, yeah, but my favorite are the ones. My favorite are the ones between the New Testament and the Old Testament, where they can't even remember like who said what. So, for example, if you go to
If you're looking at the Bible as a whole and you see something like that saying they can't remember who says what, and you're trying to disprove the Bible in its entirety, no one's gonna buy that. Like. That's like no
okay,
one
so wild when, goalpost when the, shift. You just asked us for
a crazy goalpost shift.
You said, "Give me a contradiction," and if you give me a, and then you switch it to, "Well, that hardly means that the entirety of the Bible is false." Do you want us to just merely give you a contradiction, or do you want us to somehow prove that the entirety of the Bible is false, which is something we don't even believe in?
Yeah. So I was basically saying that I do believe that there are contradictions in the Bible. However, I do not think that these contradictions are significant enough to throw out the Bible in its entirety.
I'm going to show you one. I'm going to show you a lie in the Bible that's very important, okay? Have you read Jeremiah 31 before?
Is this about where the... oh, wait, no, I don't think so.
Okay, so in Jeremiah 31, what's happening is the Israelites are being taken captive by the Babylonians, and God is saying, it's okay, they're going to come back eventually. Right, you already know in Jeremiah chapter 25, God says they're only going to be taken captive for 70 years. And then in Jeremiah 31, we get the vision of restoration. This is what's going to happen when they come back. And we have a really interesting line about halfway through the chapter where the prophet says, "Thus saith the Lord, a voice is heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping. Rachel is weeping for her children. She refuses to be comforted for her children because they are no more. Thus saith the Lord, keep your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for there is a reward for your work, says the Lord. They shall come back from the land of the enemy. There is hope for your future, says the Lord. Your children shall come back to their own country." What, just on face value, what is this a prophecy about?
The people coming back.
Yeah. Anything else?
To be honest, I wasn't paying attention too much.
I can read it a second time. It's okay.
Okay, well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it says, "Thus saith the Lord, a voice is heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping. Rachel is weeping for her children." It's a metaphor. Rachel was the beloved mother of the children that was the wife of Joseph. It says, "She refuses to be comforted for her children because they are no more. Thus saith the Lord, keep your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for there's a reward for your work, says the Lord. They shall come back from the land of the enemy. There's hope for your future, says the Lord. Your children shall come back to their own country." So yes, just
that the people should come back and her children should come back as well.
Exactly. They're just like in chapter 25, God's saying it's okay, they're going to come back within 70 years or so. Now the problem is if you go to Matthew chapter 2 and go to like 17 to 18, when Herod kills all the babies in Bethlehem, it says, "Then what was spoken through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, wailing in loud lamentation. Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more." But we just read Jeremiah. It wasn't about a bunch of babies getting killed in Bethlehem. It literally says that they're going to come back from the land of the enemy. These children aren't coming back from anywhere. They're dead.
So does that mean that the entire existence of that tribe was taken out as well? Or just...
No. You're missing the point. Jeremiah was saying that the Israelites are going to come back from Babylon. That is what the prophecy was about. It was about the Israelites coming back from Babylon. In Matthew, he's saying that that prophecy was fulfilled when Herod executed the babies in and around Bethlehem. But that's a lie. That's not what that prophecy is about.
Yeah, I see. But isn't it kind of like a partial fulfillment, though?
No.
Because then
are babies in are the babies in Bethlehem coming back from Babylon?
But then if they return from the Babylonian exile after the fact?
They returned from Babylon hundreds of years before this account in Matthew. That's not what we're questioning. We're questioning is how in the world is anything being fulfilled with the babies being executed in Bethlehem when the prophecy has nothing to do with that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Right.
I looked something up and it says, "The immediate return from exile was partially realized, but the full final restoration was never fully experienced in historical sense."
I know. It'll never be fully experienced ever because the God of this book isn't real.
Okay.
Want to do another one?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to go to Hosea chapter 11. And there's a really interesting situation happening in Hosea. Hosea is laying the groundwork for a prophecy in verses 1 through 4. The prophecy starts in verse 5. It says, "They shall return to the land of Egypt, and Assyria shall be their king." He gives the reason for this prophecy in these verses. He says, "When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. And the more that I called them, the more they went from me, and they kept sacrificing to the Baals and offering incense to idols." So is this a prophecy or is this history?
History.
Exactly, yeah. A prophecy is here in verse 5 where he talks about what's going to happen in the future, right?
Yeah, I haven't read it, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. History isn't prophecy, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. The problem is in the same chapter, in Matthew chapter 2, if you go to verse 14... when they go to Egypt to escape Herod killing all the babies, it says, "Joseph got up and took the child and his mother by night and went to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I have called my son.'" But we just read it. It wasn't even a prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, again, Matthew's just making stuff up.
Yeah, so I know that I've seen a few contradictions in the past, and I asked my teacher back home, who is, what's it called? Apologetics teacher. And he referred me to go to Answers in Genesis. So
that's not a good start.
Okay, but could you maybe, or I guess I could look it up and then tell you what they say? Like, look at maybe a contradiction that you have. And see what a biblical view from Answers in Genesis is to see if that maybe clears what you're saying.
I could just tell you what they're going to say.
Well, could you just read it and tell me why you don't agree with what they're saying, and then I could tell him.
No, I don't need to read it. I already know what they're going to say. They're going to say either one of two things. There is a near and a far fulfillment, or they're going to say it's a literal fulfillment, or it's a spiritual fulfillment, or specifically on Hosea 11, they're going to say it's typology, but typology isn't prophecy. Typology is a bullshit thing that people make up to justify the lack of prophecies.
So you don't even want to look it up?
I just told you exactly what it's going to say.
But how do you know if you haven't looked it up yet?
Because I already know all the apologetics. Because when I was your age, I was doing the same thing you're doing, except I actually went to Bible college and seminary and realized that the stuff that you're doing eventually ends in disaster. Because when you actually read the Bible and engage with the scholarly literature, you find out that these apologetics fall flat when you put them in the real world.
So then how come people, you could say the opposite about people who go to Bible school, they learn more about the Bible and then they come to be apologetics and people of that such, and they believe in it even more? What would you say to those people?
Very few of them do. Most people in Bible college, if you took 100 people and put them through Bible college and through seminary, and they actually had a rigorous training, there's a more of a likelihood that some of them will fall away versus becoming in the apologetic framework. So of the hundreds of people that I went to seminary with, I personally know a dozen of them that are now atheists. I know only one of them that is even engaging in apologetics, and even at that, it's soft apologetics. The ones that even I graduated with that aren't atheists, a lot of them didn't go into ministry because they're like, well, I don't know if I can actually teach all this nonsense. And even I've got a family member, I won't out him right now, I've got a family member that went to Liberty University, not a liberal school, and he ended up not going into ministry because he said, "I came in thinking I'd find answers, I actually got more questions than answers." Because when you actually engage the scholarly literature, it is overwhelmingly not apologetic.
Yeah, so then what's your advice for people who feel a connection with God, even though that they may not believe that it is entirely accurate? Would you tell these people to walk away from their religion?
My advice is to follow what's true. If you believe that there's a God, that's great. Listen, all for it. But you can't put your God in this book. because this book just isn't true. So again, I've never said I'm trying to convert everybody to atheism. I think it's the most logical position. But the fact of the matter is, even if there is a God, it's not the God of this book.
Yeah, but you can say, like, your certain people, these people that you know who went to Bible school, I could say the same people about who I know who are Christians and they have degrees in, like, my I know many evangelical people who have degrees in the Bible, and they would say the opposite of you. So I don't necessarily think that's a good argument. And
have you heard of the Clergy Project?
Every time I do ask my teacher questions back home, he does give me an answer that I find fulfilling with evidence.
Because you haven't studied anything yet. If you had him on this live stream, I'm sure we'd cook him. But do you know what the Clergy Project is?
I'm not sure.
It's a group of people specifically designed to support seminary and Bible college grads that are in ministry that no longer believe the nonsense and are leaving the church because they deconstructed. There are thousands and thousands of people that are participating in the Clergy Project that are all Bible college, all seminary educated, just like me. And they all came to the same conclusion I came to, which is that the Bible doesn't actually hold up to scrutiny. Now, are there some that survive Bible college and go into ministry? Sure, yeah. A lot of them are very liberal. You have no idea because they can't tell you. A lot of them don't believe all this nonsense.
Yeah, I just feel like that is a very bad argument, though.
It's a good argument. I know them personally.
Yeah, but I was up on your live one time and you started clowning me for saying this. But my first teacher in university who teaches chemistry and has a doctorate in chemistry is a Christian, and they don't hold to all the forms of evolution.
That's so right. Yeah, you're the kid that went to community college.
No, I go to Vanderbilt University, so that's not true.
Oh, no, that was somebody else then. I apologize. Yeah. Sorry, I had somebody else saying the same thing. It's common. But again, the fact that you have a professor that is a theist doesn't, it's not meaningful. Like,
yeah,
we have to look at actual data points. So I'm saying that there are thousands and thousands of people that went through the same educational process that I went through, and it is much more likely that they're going to fall away than to become apologists. In fact, when I was in Bible college, we had a protocol for kids that fell away in Bible college. We had specifically two professors on staff that were your go-to professors. If you felt like somebody was deconstructing and getting ready to leave Bible college, you were informed you need to talk to these two professors, and these two professors will go talk to them and try to keep them in the fold, because it was that common.
Okay, but again, I think that just because the majority of people believe in something does not say that it's necessarily correct. I think
I agree.
Say this about anything, like slavery is the first thing that comes to my mind. I wouldn't say that because the majority of people believed in slavery, something stupid like that, that it was correct. So just because you're saying... So like my professor who I've talked to multiple times about it, she doesn't really talk to me about it. Actually, I haven't talked to her multiple times, like twice. But she does believe in God. She does believe in Jesus. So do you just take her opinions to be non-validated because she holds the opposite opinions of the vast majority of biologists?
I would say if she was in this live right now and she wanted to talk about how Jesus is God, I would give her the same treatment I'm getting you. I would say, prove it. And then we would go to the Bible and I would show her how Jesus didn't fulfill a single prophecy, and he didn't even fulfill his own predictions. In Matthew 10:23, 16:27-28, and in Matthew chapter 24, he says he's coming back. He's going to judge everybody, and he's going to do it before all of his disciples have passed away. And then they all died, and he didn't do it. So he's not a Messiah. He's a liar.
Well, aren't we all his disciples who are
He says, some of you standing here to his disciples will not taste death before you see the Son of Man coming.
I wasn't there.
Okay, I have to. I have to go eat with my friend. But when you think of the Bible as a whole, and you see these stories, what you say to be stories, you see like this complexity of the Bible. You might not deem it to be complex, but it's written by different people throughout different continents. Do you think that it's just? I know you're not going to say it's put together.
They're all from the same people group. There are Israelites. No.
There are not different continents involved.
No. Jeremiah was the guy who wrote in the African continent. he literally was from Israel. He just went to Egypt during the persecution to escape the persecution and theoretically wrote some of it from Egypt. So that doesn't count as a new continent. The other guy who wrote on another continent theoretically was the guy who wrote on Patmos, who was Jewish. He was from the land of Israel. He got exiled. So again, everybody's from the same general religious, social, economic strata. It just happened to be that at some point in time, they ended up somewhere else and wrote while they were over there. That's like if I wrote a book about America in America and Eric wrote a book about America, but just happened to be traveling in Canada when he wrote it, it wouldn't be interesting that we wrote it on two different continents.
Okay, and then I have two more questions. If the Bible did have no contradictions and it didn't, and your ideology supports slavery, just the message of Christianity in general, would you believe the Bible to be true?
No, because even if it didn't have contradictions, it doesn't mean that it's not true. Like they'd say the same thing in Islam. You know, if there's no contradictions in the Quran, cool. But not having contradictions doesn't mean that it's true.
Okay, and then my last question is, if the Bible is, like many Christians say, a holy book, and it's like a book that makes you feel good when you read it, why do you think that the writers of the book would purposely put in passages that were horrific and like God commanding them to kill people groups? Like, why would these authors put those kind of passages in if that, like them doing that, they know would turn people away from the book? Like,
well, they probably didn't think that way. Yeah.
Exactly. They thought they were putting something in there that was beneficial because they went in and they slaughtered all these people. And that at some point, their grandchildren were like, hey, why did we come in and slaughter all these people? And they're like, well, we had to because God cursed them, right? The same thing, like in the 50s, it was very popular to do both books and movies of like cowboys versus Indians. And they painted the Native Americans as being like these wild savages that needed to be subdued. That's propaganda shit. That's the same thing the Bible's doing. We're saying we had to do it. Look at him.
Yeah, but again,
and you can make the same argument about Islam. That they do the same thing. They say go kill the disbelievers, go unalive them, go rape them, take their children, take their wives, etc. It says the same thing.
Yeah, but again, like I guess that is a fair point if it's a different book. I'm just not exactly sure why the authors would say, like, this loving God is coming to save you. This loving God is coming to take away your sins. This loving God wants a relationship with you. And then they just decide to put in, like, but this God also commands the killing of innocent children. This God also commands, like, doing all this horrible stuff. I just feel like that's something that actually happened and God actually commanded them to do that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put it in the Bible. I feel like there would have been no point to do so.
They put it there because it was already part of their culture. You can't take it away.
Exactly.
When your culture has a holy book, you can't just go into it and just rip all the stuff out of it that you don't like. You have to find a way to massage it. You have to say, oh, actually, God gave us progressive revelation. Oh, actually, God didn't give those laws forever. He said to follow it just for a time period because you have hardened hearts. You just find ways to soften it, which is the same thing Christians are doing today. You're going back to the Bible, and you're just finding ways to massage it to not give it up.
All right. I see. I appreciate talking with you guys.
You're welcome. Good to hear from you, man.
All right, see ya.
Cheers.
The simpler answer to his question is we create the gods in our own image.
That's 100% it.